Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives, discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
In New Zealand, we lose 102 young people to suicide each year. It's an awful number. The Youth in Transition is a charitable trust north of Auckland and offers a transitional pathway for young people at risk of suicide to help them back on the road to recovery. Their program is called The Journey Back to Awesome. Our guests on Take It From Us today are counsellor and co-founder of the Youth in Transition, Tina Jones, and youth mentor, Grayson Nipper. Grayson himself has graduated from the program and has a very special relationship with Tina. A warning, this episode of Take It From Us deals with the issue of suicide. And now, let's hear about the journey back to awesome. Well, Tina and Grayson, it is lovely of you to join us on Take It From Us.
It's an absolute privilege to be here. A real pleasure.
Grayson, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Got some sunshine today. Feeling pretty nice, really.
Yeah. And how's life treating you now?
Pretty good. Just the other day, we had like a nice one of our sort of bi-weekly little meetings. Talking about mental health stuff and learning new things. So that was pretty cool. And lots of new people coming into the trust, which is nice too. It's not sort of just staying stagnant, like things are moving around and people are growing. So that's always nice to see too.
Yeah. And what's the impact on your life been from going through the Journey Back to Awesome program?
Pretty much starting from, you know, wanting to kill myself and having already decided that I was going to, you know, fly on a plane overseas and die in a motorbike crash, and then sort of slowly progressing, talking to people, learning stuff, opening my mind to, you know, I think I'm a much calmer, much more well-rounded, much more wise person today, you know?
And tell us about, Tina, I'll ask you, about the relationship between you and Grayson, and how did this start?
So I met Grayson around 10 years ago, when I had just set up the charity, and he was not in a good space. His father had brought him to see me because he was extremely worried about his mental health. And the first time I met Grayson, he was not really wanting to engage. He was probably one of the hardest clients I've ever had to work with. And, you know, our job is pretty easy. Most of the kids that come to us who, you know, don't want to die, they just want the pain to stop, and they're open to help. Grayson wasn't one of those people. I had to work incredibly hard with him. But what an absolute privilege and a joy it has been. And in fact, he's taught me so much as a clinician. I'm not afraid to work with any young person now. And to see him graduate last year, you know, with a first class honours degree in mechanical engineering, I literally couldn't contain myself, and I sat in the audience watching him cross the stage. And, you know, he gives me so much inspiration every day with giving back. You know, he's mentoring lots of other young people, and I hear my words coming out of his mouth, and it's just amazing how resistant he was, and now I hear him telling lots of other young people, you know, how to manage their emotions. It's pretty special. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can be a pretty... I was just going to say, yeah, I can be a real stubborn bastard, so it's it's not always easy to put new ideas into my head or change my mind on things.
Can you remember, Grayson, when the resistance was broken?
Never. My personality has never changed. I'm always resistant to everyone and everything. I think that's maybe, you know, sort of a testament to how clever Tina is. And I think that's kind of maybe a pretty relevant point for a lot of other mental health counselling that's available. You know, I remember going through the Rodney mental health team, and they basically give you six sessions. So you know, I went along to those, and it was sort of like, you know, by the end of talking to someone for a couple hours, they've sort of had to make up their mind as to what's going on with you. So in this case, the lady had just decided that I was quite aggressive, and I don't think she liked me particularly either. And so after session number six, it was kind of like, okay, see you later. That's the end of it. And yeah, I mean, for me, it's almost worse than useless, you know, trying to cram all of this massive amount of change into a really, really short time. It just doesn't work. I think a lot of people are more receptive than me, and more sort of agile, but it's still not easy for anyone to kind of go right back into your past and figure out what's going on in your head.
So what has the time frame been for you, Grayson, to find health again? Tina mentioned that you first started working together 10 years ago. How long did it take?
Probably about 5 years. I think part of the program that they've made is that it's kind of, it is graduated, and it kind of comes in steps, which is nice. So, you know, initially, if you are really, really struggling, it's mostly like that clinical work. So talking with sort of professional counselors and that sort of stuff. But later, what I think is really, really important is kind of some of the other stuff that we can do and that the community can offer. So that would be like, you know, we sort of have these little art groups that we try and set up. So just so, you know, young people, me, you know, I wasn't all on my own. There was other people around me, other young people who were kind of similar. So that's really, really important, I think, having that kind of sense of community. And then talking with people kind of like you were saying that you would sort of know about, you know, nutrition and that sort of stuff, really awesome people, you know. I've met some really strange characters that I probably wouldn't have spoken to otherwise. but yeah, that's that when you can evolve past that sort of initial really critical point, you can learn more and sort of start to give back a little bit too. And yeah, I would say, yeah, initially maybe a year to get past that really initial point, and right, then, you know, a couple of years to really learn all the lessons. Yeah. I mean, and it still hasn't really finished, so 10 years is probably more accurate.
Tina, would you describe your role as that of a counsellor or a mentor or a confidant? Are you a coach? How do you help young people?
I'm a registered counsellor, and, you know, when I first set up the charity, I realised that these young people that I was working with, there was no one size that fits all. So, and I actually asked them what they needed to stay alive. So they co-created the Journey Back to Awesome with me. And it wasn't just counselling, it was mentoring, because Grayson also was mentored by an 80-year-old boat builder, because one of the things he told me he wanted to do was to learn carpentry. And it was just amazing to be able to visit this old dude, as Grayson would call him, you know, and he was just literally waiting to die. And then he met Grayson and he shared his skills. And I can remember Grayson coming back and telling me, you know, oh, the old dude knows a lot. And, you know, they'd had fish and chips together and Grayson taught him a few things, I'm sure, as well. So, you know, so the program itself, we have counseling, we have mentoring, we have the peer support groups, which Grayson was part of from the very beginning. And just to see the friendships and, you know, the sort of skills that I teach them individually being put into place in a group, you know, they're having to learn things like conflict resolution and how to be kind to each other, et cetera. And I think it helps them seeing others that are struggling too. And then, of course, health and nutrition was a big part of what we did and do, because obviously we can, you know, use all the skills that are necessary. But if a young person isn't eating properly, you know, it's not going to happen. And then, you know, we have the family support side as well, which is equally as important for younger people. But people like Grayson, where, you know, he had an awful lot of stuff to unpack in his past, as he mentioned, with we work very closely with mental health services, but they can only offer a clinical model, which is, you know, pills and skills, and it doesn't cut it for many of the young people. And exercise and being out in nature. I mean, our retreat out at Wainui, you know, the kids do gardening. I mean, getting their hands in soil is far better than any antidepressant. Grayson takes kids up in the bush. You know, we've got dogs, we've got cats, we've got chickens, we've got sheep, and animals play a huge part in the lives of these young people. And I even remember one of the kids, you know, planting a lettuce and staying alive because they wanted to see the lettuce grow. You know, it's really, really special and really different. But the way I designed the program was in consultation with them, and it really works. I mean, we've got an amazing community. It's not just us. The amount of people that give us their skills and services for free. You know, we've got gardeners who come and help kids and keep our gardens, you know, neat. Women cook for these kids. I mean, it's just amazing, this community we're living. And, yeah, I mean, Grayson's, you know, now giving back and doing amazing things around this place, which is awesome.
It's hard to think of a more powerful question that you could ask someone. What is it that you need to stay alive?
Yes.
Do you remember, Grayson, what your answer was to that question?
What is it that I need to stay alive? I guess sometimes it's not so much that, you know, what do you need to stay alive? You know, it's more that you're kind of lost sight of, you know, any kind of hopefulness for the future. At least that's what it felt like for me. And it's more that you're just trying to run away from what's going on at the moment. You know, everything just seems dark and gray. You know, nothing seems that colorful or exciting anymore. So I think, you know, part of what the charity is trying to do is give people something to look forward to again, like a lettuce growing or...
That's great, so.
Yeah, well, it's life. Lettuces live, and there's hope there, and there's a future. Is that is that what you need to just hang on to as best you can?
I think so, because you know, it's quite easy to just become sort of hopeless and nihilistic and think that, you know, especially if you are in that depressed mindset, that things are just always going to be this way and it's pointless trying to change. It can be quite a hard thing to get out of. You know, sometimes it's honestly kind of a strange feeling to think back maybe 10 years ago of how my mindset was. It's a little bit like remembering a really strange dream that you had last night where, you know, you were trying to achieve some goal or there was something going on in that dream, but looking at it logically, it really doesn't make any sense.
No, and I think your brain at that time wasn't developed like it is now. His frontal cortex wasn't online, so it was very... you know, irrational and was not making best choices. I mean, now when I see how mature you are, and many young people say the same, you know, did I really do all of that? You know, and I think if we can get young people through that stage till their frontal cortex gets online and they've got, you know, more rational thinking, it's huge. It makes a huge difference. And I do believe that offering Grayson certain things like the boat building, you know, learning woodwork. I also introduced him to a monk to learn meditation. And you can imagine the expletives that came out of his mouth at first when I suggested it to him. But, you know, they now have an amazing relationship, you know, Grayson and the monk. And we took a lot of the kids down to, you know, a center where they learned how to properly, and it's made a huge difference to their lives. I mean, you might want to speak to that, Grayson, because, you know, I remember you laughing at me and...
Yeah, I wasn't too receptive to thinking about meditation or, you know, Buddhist monks. I was sort of derisive and just thinking that they sat around on rocks doing nothing and were just sort of lazy hippies or something like that. But yeah, I was really fortunate to meet Kadra. She wasn't, she didn't mind me saying anything to her, and she was a really open-minded person, so I was super impressed. And yeah, there was a period where I was picking her up from the North Shore, and we were driving out to West Auckland and back every day to do this little seminar that she was taking there. And so that was really mind-opening for me to have that one-on-one time with her and kind of talk to this venerable cadre who'd kind of been there and done it. You know, she hadn't just kind of, she hadn't always been this this Buddhist nun. She had come from a a petroleum executive kind of background. So it was really like interesting to see her perspective on things.
I imagine Tina is awesome and rewarding, must be so rewarding for you, and the pride that you speak of about Grayson's progress, that's obviously counterbalanced probably by some desperation and some sadness at the sheer volume of support that's required, and the fact that the need, tell me I'm wrong, it seems like it's increasing. Was that right?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, there's a huge pandemic. We cover the Hibiscus Coast and Rodney area. We've worked with over 800 young people who have, you know, we don't work with the worried well. We're working with kids who really don't want to be here. And we get most of our referrals from Rodney Mental Health or Marinotto or the local GPs, the police, and we work with all these people. And we've got over 200 young people in the program at the moment that have either attempted to kill themselves or are really wanting to die. And so it is hard work, and it takes a lot of effort and, you know, like perseverance to help them and give them the hope, like Grayson said. And the people that we have working here are super special because, you know, every day we're hearing unbearable stories and parents that are beside themselves, you know, and trying to take care of their young people. But the love that's poured into this place and these young people are seeing, there are so many wonderful people in this community that are prepared to do whatever it takes to help us, to help these kids. You know, we were gifted this retreat, you know, by Rod Duke, the Briscoes guy, you know, because he played in one of our golf decks, because we don't get government funding. And he said, what can I do to help? Because he'd heard about our work, and he just bought us this property. And for the kids that are here, are like, my gosh, you know, this guy really cares about us, and he does care. And so there are lots of stories like that, you know, with our Manly premises, we had a guy that also, you know, gave us a room and facilities to manage that. And it was desperately sad because he was dying of leukemia, and he would come and talk to the kids and say, look, dudes, I don't have a choice. And Grayson will remember him incredibly well. And, you know, it was so powerful that many of these young people stayed alive, you know, and so there's so many stories like that. And, you know, we're just sort of overawed of people that want to help, because it's not an easy space to step into. When Grayson was at his worst, it was really, really hard. I remember, you know, thinking, is he going to be alive tomorrow? What else could we be doing? You know, and then here he is, as are hundreds of other young people have gone through it. So, you know, we're taking new referrals every week. We're taking around 40 referrals. We're having to turn some kids away, which is desperately sad. I mean, we work with young people from the age of 10 to 24. And I cannot believe that even little 10-year-olds know how to kill themselves. It's desperately sad.
That seems real extraordinarily young to hear that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've got a hard job because, you know, we've got a small window of time in which to work with these kids and get them to trust us. But I must say that it is having people like Grayson and other mentors that have been through the program. You know, we can teach as therapists all the kids all these skills. Grayson will come along and say, oh, well, this is what helped me. And they get it, you know, because he's living proof. He's been there, and he can look them in the eye. And it's, you know, it's really amazing how he comes to our groups now. He's a bit of a groupie. We've got younger kids coming through and they, you know, just hang on his every word because they know he's walked the talk and he's there for them. It's just really special. Yeah, lovely.
That's really nice to hear. And Grayson, what was missing in your life that has now been filled?
I think I was the same as a lot of other young men where I just had a lot of sort of, you know, inbuilt self-destructive and sort of violent tendencies. And I think my perspective on the world was that, you know, growing up, I thought what I was meant to be was just, you know, this tough guy who achieved things and always pushed forward in everything. That's how I'd sort of always been trained. You know, I learned how to play, you know, I played rugby my whole life and I'd done kickboxing. So that was my usual mode of operation is just keep pushing forward. And that does work for a lot of things, you know, just hard work and determination gets you a long way. But in this case, I think I was really not understanding and sort of avoiding that something was actually wrong with me. You know, I didn't want to accept that. It was just being quite hard on myself, just saying that I'm lazy or that I'm just, you know, fucking up somehow, you know, just that pushing ahead attitude and that kind of, you know, hard-headedness couldn't really help me at all. And so I just ended up, you know, kind of like lying to myself that everything's fine, lying to other people and kind of slowly pushing them away. And, you know, it wasn't like, it was sort of a bit of a gradual process, but yeah, eventually it became harder and harder to just, you know, see any light in the world, you know, yeah, things just kind of became more gray and kind of ground down around me. So I think having those really amazing people to talk with and sort of inspirational stuff going on, you know, once I started to get a little bit more well, that was really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's missing from a lot of the government services, you know, when people hear that so much money is going into mental health funding, or, you know, they're particularly concerned about just how many young people are killing themselves. I think the statistics are grossly underrepresented mm-hmm. because I wouldn't have been a suicide statistic. No one would have ever known. I think that, yeah, that cold clinical world and that really bureaucratic process where all this money is funded into sort of managers and upper level decision makers, it doesn't really help. You need like community run projects. You need people to actually have a sense of belonging. And people, mm-hmm. it's what's really great is that, you know, people are really, really willing to give to, you know, they're really keen to help out, give back.
And you're speaking obviously too about lived experience and empathy, but also vulnerability. And you've been able to build now some trust with young people who look up to you. So what does it mean to you, Grayson, to have come through the program, to be working on yourself at a very deep level for the best part of 10 years, and then now be in a position to give back?
It's really, really amazing. You know, it's quite, you know, to sort of see over a process of even just a year or a couple months, someone go from, you know, not very talkative at all in this deep, you know, dark blanket over them to this like flourishing person. It's really, really, really cool. Yeah, I sort of feel like sometimes I'm not really the best person to be like a mentor, or I'm not really set up personality-wise to be that kind of super empathetic, kind person. But I think sometimes just showing up and being there, you know, that's enough to make it happen.
Right, just showing up and doing the best that you can with what you've got on that particular day. And look, when you think about mentors, Tina, is that the very definition of a mentor really is someone who's been in a similar situation or can empathise greatly with the person that they're mentoring? And I have mentors, I still have them, I've had them in the past, and the one thing I makes me feel good about the relationship is this person can understand the position that I'm in right now because they've been there themselves.
Yes, we have two types of mentors. We have the Graysons, who are graduates of the program, and then we have other mentors that want to just give us their skills, or, you know, like we had a master chef who had been through struggles, and then his way of recovering was to invite all his friends around for dinner. You know, so he will come and talk to the kids. Or, you know, we wanted someone to teach us how to knit, because a lady in the community had knitted a blanket for one of the girls I was working with, who used to cut herself really badly. And then this lady knitted her a blanket and sort of said, you know, when you feel distressed, just wrap yourself in this blanket, knowing it was made with so much love. And then all the other kids wanted a blanket like it. And I was like thinking, well, I can't knit. How do I do this? And then we found someone, and it was a guy. I mean, he was about 6'6", and he came in with a miner's lamp. But, you know, he came and shared his story, and he was also like a chef on the spirit of adventure. So he took us on this amazing journey. And as a result, a few of the kids now, where they would never have wanted to jump off a boat and swim around at 5 o'clock in the morning, are going on the spirit of adventure. And it's been life-changing, because they're doing things that they could never possibly have imagined. And so, and you know, we all know how to knit. And the young people I sit in a session with, especially girls, we knit together, and it stops them harming themselves because they have to focus.
Right.
You know, so we have, he's like a mentor for us. So we have all different people wanting to share their skills, and, you know, and then there's the Graysons who have been through the program, you know, and want to come back and help. But
Tina, how are you able to support families who love their kids with all their heart, and it must be heartbreaking for them? Are you able to help families as well?
Yeah, I mean, we are not focused on families, but we realize that, you know, we get much better outcomes when we work with a whole family. So what we do, we've joined with other organizations, brilliant organizations like Yellow Brick Road and Steps Forward and parenting programs, so that we've got this real wraparound approach to the young people. So we deal with the young people, we call in our colleagues, and we all work together for the best outcome. Because the parents, you know, often don't know what to do. They're in absolute despair, sleeping outside their young people's homes. They're having to lock ropes and knives and goodness knows what in the boots of their car. And there's no manual for this sort of stuff. And when you see, you know, your young person so distressed and you can't help. So, yeah, we have many parents who also come back to help after, you know, which has been lovely. And, you know, they talk to other parents, et cetera. But we've got a whole network of parenting people as well who are real specialists at dealing with mental health issues, because things like tough love just don't work with our type of young people. It's hard.
And there are five components to the program. We've talked about some of them. You mentioned the support groups. Clearly, the mentoring's been big. The lifestyle coaching. There's also one-to-one counselling and also the family support. So, yeah. Grayson, what was there anything in particular that you leant into heavily to help you in recovery?
No, I really think it was the combination of everything. Everything built upon everything else. I probably wouldn't have been as receptive to the mentoring if not for that initial counselling. And I don't think, you know, without kind of some of those community groups that we had, or those sort of peer groups that we had, I would have been as into, you know, listening to other advice when I was sort of further down the path. So I really think it's never just one thing. And it's been quite a learning experience for me, like talking with other people, what's really, you know, like I find it very soothing to take walks in the nighttime, you know, look up at the starry sky and kind of feel this sense of calm and kind of awe at all of my life's problems are so insignificant compared to the universe. And I remember talking to this girl about, you know, maybe that would be helpful for her too. And, you know, for her, that would be the most terrifying, awful experience that she wouldn't want to take part in at all. So everyone's a bit different, and I think it's a combination of everything that works the best.
So Tina, you're obviously working with and helping people who are at our young rangatahi who are at a risk of suicide. How do we identify, or how can we figure out who might be at risk of suicide? Because I imagine it's a question that a lot of us would be, we would find fraught with uncertainty and a little bit unsure. What sort of advice can you give us in that regard?
Oh, look, there are some obviously obvious warning signs, like, you know, your young person would be withdrawing. They might, you know, be giving away their prized possessions. They might not be enjoying the things that they used to enjoy. I mean, you as a parent would see the deterioration. There's, you know, maybe a lot of bullying going on and they're not able to speak about it. So they might not be going out. They might be missing school. There's a whole array of things. But I think the important thing is to get the help sooner rather than later. You know, and there's amazing helplines, there's amazing services to reach out to. And, you know, the GP is probably the first port of call. And then the GPs, most of the local ones around here know us. I mean, we don't advertise for obvious reasons, and we get far too many referrals anyway. But what we do is we take referrals that are really, you know, the most unwell. And, you know, because, well, we don't work with a young person for a few weeks. The minimum they stay in our program is a year. You know, so it's a very long-term relationship. And when we assess young people that come into the program, it's kind of like, look, this is going to be your second home for the next year or so. And, you know, we expect young people to turn up and show up. Otherwise, they lose their place in the program because, you know, we can't muck about. We've got to do some serious work. But, you know, parents do know their young people better than anyone. All friends, you know, we work with a lot of friends. We get a lot of referrals from young people who say, I'm really concerned about Freddie. He's disclosed to me he's going to kill himself. And, you know, it's that kind of thing, not being afraid. I mean, kids are a lot more astute nowadays. And we're doing so many programs out in the community of teaching anybody how to have those conversations, you know, with somebody that you're concerned about. And, you know, and I think it would be wise for everyone to go on one of these courses. They're called Safe Talk. And it's like, you know, how to notice the signs, you know, and how to respond and where to go to get the help. We can all be lifesavers, literally.
And Grayson, what are the best hopes for yourself now?
What do you mean exactly?
What are you hopeful for? What are you looking forward to with your life?
Oh, I see. Well, it's been quite cool now that, you know, seeing youth in transition kind of go from like this one tiny little room where we ate pizza above a real estate agent's to this, you know, like multi-million dollar property where we get to do lots of really cool stuff. So, yeah, I quite enjoy having that, like, you know, feeling community and meeting more really like good people. So I just want to keep doing more of that.
And how will you use your qualification? Congratulations, by the way, graduating with honours.
Yeah. Sort of specialising in medical devices. So hopefully doing just new, interesting kind of work where I get to work with new materials, new technology. I get bored pretty quickly. So, you know, just having new challenges all the time is really good for me.
And it's been so great to have you on the program. So we thank you for that. And Tina, hope, optimism. I mean, you have to stay optimistic, right? To be doing the work Absolutely. That you're doing and having done it yeah. for so long, you have to hang on to that. What are you most optimistic and hopeful about?
I'd like to see us be made redundant, that our service wouldn't be needed anymore. That would be my hope. I don't think it's going to happen for a long time, but, you know, that would be it, you know, that young people can have all of these skills taught at much earlier age and, you know, suicide just wouldn't be a go-to when things get tough.
Well, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. And it's, I know what a special relationship you have together, the two of you. Thank you so much for sharing it with us on Take It From Us.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon from Planet FM. And I'm your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
Table while I'm still crying, I take my chances to be.